Thank you. It's so wonderful to be here with you and to share a little bit about the love of my life, which is Ayurveda. And how many of you, just out of curiosity, have heard of Ayurveda before? Wow, everyone, almost. That's wonderful. That's really, really nice. So I just wanted to start by sharing a little bit with you about my own journey with this science and with this practice. I, unlike all of you, did not know about Ayurveda when I was growing up. I had never heard this word until I was a college student here at NYU Stern Business School, and I was really stressed, you know, so I started to go to yoga classes and get to know some of the other people in the yoga community. And in doing so, I remember having coffee with someone, and she's like, "So, do you know your dosha?" And I was like, "What? What is that?" You know, like, I don't know my dosha. I don't know what that means and why that's important. And she's like, "You know, it's from Ayurveda." And I was like, "What is that?" You know, so I didn't really fully understand what it was until I, you know, went to a yoga ashram in India to complete my yoga teacher training in Kerala. And, you know, being in New York, I was just very, very stressed. So I had sought out something for that, and yoga, you know, seemed to really help. So I started to practice that. And then, you know, it was interesting because Western medicine always told me that I was in excellent health. And I was like seriously questioning that because I was having so much trouble sleeping at night. I had a lot of trouble with my digestion. I was under so much stress. I had a lot of anxiety, trouble focusing. I mean, I managed, you know, I like could cope with it and achieve what I needed to achieve, but it was like achieving, 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 and it all felt really empty inside, you know, like what is the point of this? Like why am I just constantly in this chase, this search for something? And, you know, if I'm in excellent health, then why am I having all these troubles? I'd also struggled for many years with eating disorders and sought out everything I could. You know, like I went to the online forums, I read books in libraries, I tried to go to counselors and try to, you know, talk my way through it and try to understand why I'm having this problem. But nothing could really help me. Nothing, you know, really spoke to me at all the levels that I felt I needed to be able to heal myself, you know, at the physical level, the mental level, the spiritual level. There was just this deep hunger inside. And I wanted to know, you know, those big questions too, like, why am I here? What is the purpose of this life? You know, why is there suffering? And what is the way out? So encountering this wisdom and then coming to California from New York to work with juvenile inmates. I used to teach meditation and yoga to two inmates in California, in Alameda and San Mateo counties. And it was a powerful experience because, as you know, meditation and yoga are so powerful and they do awaken us no matter where we're at in our journey. So I had felt awakened by it, that I saw these changes in them where they would stop themselves from getting written up and, you know, into further trouble where they were. So that was a really amazing experience. But then I still felt stuck, that even though I could help them and I could see a transformation happening in them, there's still like a prison of my own mind that I knew I really wanted to be free from. So that was when I started to learn about Ayurveda, and I started to study with a teacher who had grown up living Ayurveda in India with her grandfather. And there they were immersed in a gurukul system of education, which is the traditional system of education from ancient India, where the students used to go and actually stay close to the teacher and learn not only the theoretical principles of a particular discipline, but also learn through role modeling and learn through living it. You know, it's like really an experiential type of learning. So she had set up this type of a school, and, you know, I had all these grand plans that I wanted to help other people by learning Ayurveda. I wanted to help the inmates. I wanted to help, you know, so many other people. And she said, "No, you need to first, you know, live this. You need to experience it, and you need to feel that, you know, connection within before you go and try to, you know, change other people and help other people." So it was a really a good challenge, you know, of really how do I master my own self, and a beautiful journey that then unfolded. And so I'm really, really happy to share that with you as we go through our presentation here today. And Ayurveda, you know, is so unique. It goes beyond the World Health Organization's definition of health is just being the absence of disease, right? So in Ayurveda, health is much broader. It's multidimensional. It has four different ways of, expressing itself through the body, through the mind, through the spirit, and also through the five senses. So that's a very unique contribution of the science of Ayurveda, whereas there is a lot now in terms of mind, body, spirit healing. We hear that all the time as kind of a catchphrase in the whole wellness world, right? But, no one really talks as much about the five senses and how do we heal those senses and how do we be in a state of balance with them. And what's really interesting in Ayurveda is that health is actually defined as being a state of balance. So if we were to summarize the definition of health in Ayurveda, it would be balance. And there's a really beautiful shloka, like a traditional verse in an Ayurvedic text called Sushrut Samhita, which defines a state of health as being samadosha, samagnischa, samadhatu, malakriya, prasanna atmaindriya, mana svastha iti abhidhyate. So what that means is we want sama. Sama means balance. We want a balanced state of our three doshas of the agni, right? The digestive fire. If you've heard of Ayurveda, you might have heard of the concept of the digestion as being like a fire inside the body, and we want it to be in a balanced state. We want all of the tissues of the body to be in balance. We want the waste of the body to be eliminating, in a proper way. And we also want to experience a sense of joy. So prasanna means joy. So the joy of our spirit, of our five senses. Indriya means senses, and mana is the mind. So there should be a sense of joyful mind, joyful senses, joyful spirit, and connection to that spirit. And it's amazing because the word svastha, it means health, and it literally means to be established, asti, in sva, which is your true self. And what's so inspiring to me about the way that I've learned Ayurveda from my guru, Acharya Shunya, is that it really is about connecting with what's already within you. So you already are healthy. You have health within. It's your true state. And so what we're doing in Ayurveda is not just balancing doshas, as many people might like to offer it, as cool as that seems, right? Like, oh, just go check out Cosmo, check off my dosha, do this whole thing for my skin. But then it's like, hey, wait, why didn't it work? And it's because, well, usually people have more than one dosha, so we're more complex than that. And it's also so much more vast. And there's a whole sub-branch of Ayurveda that specifically is there to teach you how to be healthy, irrespective of your dosha, irrespective of what is going on in your life. There are certain daily seasonal practices that you can do just to really reclaim that health, because health is your true state. And I think that was a big paradigm shift for me, because I had for so long just identified with all these labels and all these stories that we tell ourselves, right? Like I went on the chat rooms and it was like somethingfishy.com or something. It truly was fishy. There wasn't anything of real substance there. And I would start identifying with that. Oh yeah, I'm anorexic. What is this person? And stuff like that. And, to move beyond those labels, I think was very, very freeing for me. And that really, was the beginning of this journey. And just in terms of, Buddhism, it's really interesting because here we find a lot of synchronicity, because Buddhism came in, after Ayurveda had been around for many years. And so you'll see references in the Dhammapada to Ayoga and Ati yoga, so overuse and underuse of anything, right? When we are in excess or we're not having enough, there's not a sense of balance. So in Ayurveda, we talk about, the five senses and not overusing them, underusing them, or wrongly using them. It's actually a really, really important indicator of health. So when we look at a person, we look at them very holistically and we say, we ask a lot of questions to find out how are your ears being utilized? How is your skin interacting with the world? What are you seeing through your eyes? And how does that, translate to your mind and to your spirit and, affect all levels of your being? And similarly, of course, what we taste, what we eat is a very, very foundational part of Ayurveda. But definitely, you know, for balance, moderation is the key. So it's very similar to the middle path that the Buddha has taught. And Buddha is known as Mahavishaka in Ayurveda tradition as the great healer, because Buddha was teaching this fourfold path, right? To the Four Noble Truths, to really, you know, show the way out of suffering. And it's really amazing because the definition of Ayurveda actually goes into compassion. It tells us that, you know, there are choices that we make, and these choices can be beneficial and they could be not beneficial. So there's another shloka which goes, hita hitam sukham dukkham, hita hitam sukham dukkham ayustasya hita hitam manam chatachya yatroktam ayurveda sa uchayate. And what this means is that Ayurveda is that science which teaches us to delineate between actions that are hita or beneficial and those that are ahita or non-beneficial. Because this is a life science, right? So we're not just talking at the level of dosha or the level of our tissues in our body or the 13 types of agni that we have, but we're talking about everything. We're talking about, you know, everything in this world, every thought, every word, every action that we take can be a medicine or it can be a poison. And so how are we, you know, interacting with this world around us? Because we are interconnected with everything and all of existence. So we want to make this experience, you know, beneficial, and not just for ourselves, but they define in Ayurveda that the health-giving actions are those that are benefiting not only you, but society as well. So nowadays, you know, people are finding out about the power of compassion at the Greater Good Science Center and Stanford C-Care, and, you know, all these leading institutions are discovering, oh yeah, compassion is the key, gratitude is really important, all of these things, you know, were well known by the ancient traditions. And they further go on to define what brings joy and what brings sorrow. So the, you know, joy-giving actions are those that are beneficial. And so we want to, you know, follow that in what we're doing. And that's really the key, because health and happiness are one and the same. And they are our birthright. That's something that is very clearly expressed throughout Ayurveda, that health is your birthright. And you know, you can access this state through the choices that you're making every day and in every moment. So it's very, very inspiring that way. And it's as old as life itself, you know? So Ayurveda comes from Ayush, which is life, and Veda, which means knowledge of. So in as early as the 3rd century BCE, the Ayurveda science developed an advanced scientific methodology. This photo that you see is actually of a sage called Sushrut, who is considered the grandfather of modern surgery. And he had discovered many advanced techniques for surgery well before, you know, it was discovered by modern medicine. And the texts that he recorded these insights in are predating the Corpus Hippocraticum, you know, by many, many years. So it's an amazing science. It's an intuitive science. There's logic in it, and it's really rooted in the laws of physics. So we'll learn more about that as we continue on with our journey here today. And it's also very noteworthy that in India, there are many different rulers for many different time periods. So foreign, you know, rulers had come in, and in many of the foreign rulerships, Ayurveda had been very devalued. You know, they were not told to really practice that too much. The libraries were getting burnt down. It was really sad. You know, there's a university that used to have 10,000 students who would just stay free of charge. The royalty would pay for, you know, the the presence of this university. There would be like 2,000 faculty there, and Ayurveda was actually a required subject. Whether you wanted to be an architect or a doctor or a lawyer or a mathematician, you had to learn Ayurveda just as a part and parcel of life. And it was really integral to India as well for many, many, you know, years before all of the foreign rulers had come in and taken over. But in the Buddhist period, when there were Buddhist kings in India, that's when Ayurveda really flourished. That's when Ayurveda really took off. And it was thanks to the Buddhist monks also who had really spread the science out to China, to Tibet, to, you know, Afghanistan, and to so many nearby places. And they had been, you know, really disseminating this knowledge for the benefit of all. So you might have heard of King Ashoka, right? The pacifist king who really believed so much in compassion and, you know, doing good for society that he renounced violence. And he was actually sending missionaries out with Ayurvedic knowledge to teach people how to grow herbs and to do simple practices to take care of their health in all natural ways. So Buddha's personal physician also was someone named Jivaka, and he was an amazing Ayurveda scholar. And there are many scholars actually from the Buddhist tradition who went deep into the knowledge of Ayurveda and who have been playing very important contributions to the spreading of that. So it was very integral, and it's believed that even in the Buddhist monasteries, the nuns and the monks used to, you know, live this lifestyle and probably like eat the foods, and, you know, it was really very much supporting the experience of, you know, living the path that the Buddha has shown us. So we'll just go now into how Ayurveda heals us, like all these different teachings and how we can kind of understand some of the core principles. So Ayurveda is all about living in harmony with nature. And, you know, if we were to give health can be summarized as balance. If we were to talk about stress management in Ayurveda, we would say the solution is really to live in harmony with nature. Nature is the ultimate healer. And even though we're here in New York City, there are still ways that we can reconnect with nature and really live in harmony with nature's laws and nature's rhythms to be able to access that true state, which is health, which is wholeness, and really just unlimited freedom and power that is already there within us. We just forgot. So it's really like a journey of waking up and of remembering who we really are and all that we have within us, which is very exciting. And one of the ways that Ayurveda does that, like Buddhism, is it really goes to the root. What is the cause? We really want to dig deep and find out why is there suffering. So, you know, Buddha had revealed in the Four Noble Truths that there is suffering, and attachment to our desires is at the root of that suffering. So when we're able to let go of that attachment to our desires, that's when we experience freedom from suffering. And then, you know, the eightfold path is revealed, that we want to have right action, right thought, right livelihood, right speech, you know, and all of these things to really support us. And so the Ayurveda lifestyle is very much, you know, part and parcel with Buddhism, because it shows you that path in all actions and all activities, and even the foods that we eat and the kinds of thoughts that we think. And it really is such an important thing, because, you know, I would say if we're looking at the different levels, right, of the person, the different dimensions of health, then for physical health, digestion is very, very important. And it has mental impacts as well, because when you digest your food, then your mind is sharp and clear and focused and creative and productive. And similarly, if we were to look, you know, at a psychological level and at the root cause of why we manifest dis-ease or imbalance, it's often about where we're holding on to things. You know, where are we stuck? What are we really attached to? And so we dig into that in Ayurveda to find out, you know, what are those things that we can't let go of, and how do we start to cultivate consciously a letting go, you know, of that attachment, to free ourselves from the chains that our own mind and our own body can put us in when we're unaware that we're more than this mind, we're more than this body, but we are that, you know, that undying spirit. And so it's very much in alignment, you know, with the teachings of the Buddhist tradition. And we also have this wonderful teaching of the unity between the microcosm and the macrocosm. So everything around us is a reflection of what's within us. So when we look in the natural world, we really see the whole world as our teacher. So we look at animals, we look at plants, we look at the trees, we see how is nature, you know, functioning, and then how can we learn from nature? How can we embody her characteristics and really, you know, live in harmony with that? So if we see a lion, for example, are there attributes of the lion that we can also embody? You know, can we roar in a courageous and yet gentle way, right? And can we, you know, bring about justice? And can we be like elephants, you know, like really strong, really noble caretakers? And yet, you know, we can also see that, yeah, sometimes we'd also sting like a bee, you know, like we could be like that as well. And sometimes our emotions are like the water, you know, they just flow. And there's a sense of intensity at times with the waves and the thunder and, you know, all of these things we can actually find in our inner world as well. So it's a really beautiful exploration and understanding. And it's all connected at the level of the five great elements, which you may have heard of. This is what Ayurveda is commonly known for. And, you know, we have Vata dosha, which is made up of air and space. So this is like the subtlest of the five great elements. And when we see that in our natural world, we could see like a deer, you know, running and having that lightness and that light quality about it. In human beings, it brings out creativity and inspiration and visionary qualities. And when it's out of balance, you know, it can also bring like anxiety, stress, kind of like moving too fast, because Vata dosha is connected with movement. So it's an important one. It's actually the master in charge. So we want to always keep the Vata dosha in balance to be able to be healthy. So we'll learn some ways to do that today. And then Pitta dosha is fire and water. So this is like thermal energy, the force of, you know, metabolism and transformation in the body and in the mind. So it's connected with our digestive fire, which is very important for overall health. So this is also, you know, a very interesting and very important element. And then finally, the Kapha dosha we see in the earth and water elements. So we can see it in the mountains, we can see it in the oceans, we can see this in like a big elephant, right? And like Pitta dosha would be more like a lion. So a lot of fire, a lot of intensity. And, you know, you could see it in a CEO, for example, like they would be very sharp and having those kind of fiery characteristics about them. And then out of balance, you know, it can be too much intensity, too much, like anger could be there, you know, some kind of inflammation and heat could be there at the physical level. And then, you know, with the Kapha dosha, it's water and earth. So it brings at best a lot of nurturing energy and like a caretaker, you know, like a strong parent or a tree or, you know, something like that would be representing this particular bio force. And out of balance, you know, it can be too much lethargy, too much solidity, you know, they do want to move. So, so there could be like holding on to things too much, you know, like water retention and things like that when Kapha dosha is out of balance. So this is, you know, one connection. And then if we go subtler than this, the substratum of the whole universe is made up of these three forces of nature at the level of the mind. And this is very interesting. So just as there's three forces of the body at the gross level, there's also three layers or forces of nature at the subtle level of the mind, as expressed in the Charaka Samhita. So these are called gunas. So guna means quality. And these three gunas or qualities are like intertwining forces that weave together to make the material nature, right? So this is like the subtlest essence of the five great elements. And this is what impacts human consciousness. This is what we can also observe in ourselves and in the natural world, that there are different types of vibrations. So, you know, we can also see science poetry and philosophy merging together in the way that the ancient Ayurvedic texts have laid out this amazing science of Ayurveda psychology. And we'll just learn a little bit about it now. So one of the layers of the mind is tamas. And I like to say this is like the triple D's that we don't want. This is where darkness, depression, and denial can be. Like, no, I didn't do it. But it's like, yeah, you did it, you know, come to terms with it. This is like the dark part where you just want to like throw a blanket over your head and just forget about everything. Don't care. Don't want to do it. Don't want to deal with it. It's like the unconscious. We know better. But we just don't do better. And we're stuck, and it's like, oh, you know, tamas, so hard. Out of balance, that's why you see criminal activity, that's why you see addictions, that's why you see people just do unimaginable things, you know, in this world. And so it's really just having a lot of this quality there. And these are like the obstructing forces, you know, so this helps us understand what we're not in order to reveal what we are. And like everything, it can be helpful or it can be harmful, right? So in a state of good balance, this tamas force is what allows us to sleep. It's what allows us to rest. So if you think about it in physics, it's like the force of, you know, stagnation, which you need, right? In all things, you need a sense of movement as well as non-movement or stagnation. So that's where, you know, tamas can be helpful. But in our mind, it feels like that, and it's not very pretty. So better than that is to have rajas. Rajas is like agitation. And this is the activating force of the mind, opposite of tamas. This one will get you up, get you moving, get you things done, helps you be productive. You see a whole lot of rajas here in New York City. Like, people really got this quality down, you know, like, go, 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 you know. Yeah, of course. I mean, this is like the Rajas capital of the world. Totally. I totally agree. Whenever I think of Rajas, I like, oh yeah, New York, you know, running around, trying to make things happen, get things done, get the deadline, you know, all of that. So action, passion, motion, it's like a lake on a stormy day where there's violent thunderstorms and just so much going on. It can lead to, you know, things that are not so ethical, like lying and cheating and manipulation, restlessness, just like keep doing, but it's not satisfying. Even I felt that way, you know, when I lived in New York. It's like, I'm doing, but I don't feel, you know, like, despite I've done it all, I don't feel good, you know? Like, I thought I was going to feel good that I checked off everything on my list, but now I don't have a list and I don't feel good. What happened here, you know? So we really want to have this in balance, because when it's in balance, it helps us get things done, and that's important and helpful. And it's a step up from total, you know, stagnation. This is like the kinetic force, the force of movement, action, which we need in our lives. But what we really want and what we really need and what we're really searching for is sattva. And sattva is balance. It's the perfect balance of activity and stagnation. Sattva comes from the root word sat, which means truth, right? So in Ayurveda, we're learning to distinguish between sat and asat, those actions which bring us towards truth and which bring us towards untruth or non-truth. And this is the real state of the mind. That's what's so exciting, is that the sages have told us that your mind actually is like this clear lake on a beautiful day where it's so, you know, so exquisite that you can look down and actually see your reflection. Because your reflection, your true state is to be pure. It is to be peaceful. It is to be clear and compassionate. And, you know, all of these things that we're seeking. It's not something that you find just by checking stuff off of a list or getting things done, but it really is just like tapping into that true state that is always joyful, that is always healthy, and that is always there for us no matter what. So in this ephemeral world, so many things are coming and going, and it seems kind of totally random at times, like people coming and going and buildings even coming and going, right? And the World Trade Center just came and it went just like that within, you know, such little time. And yet, what is that thing that, you know, sustains us, and that is the substratum, and that is there to support us no matter what? And that is actually within us. And I think that's the best thing that I love about Ayurveda, and I love about Ayurveda psychology, is that it's so life affirming. It's so nice to know that the mind really is like this. I don't have to put so many judgments on my own mind. You know, I can actually just see that, okay, sometimes it has these layers, you know, it has rajas and tamas. Can I observe what's going on with that? Can I observe my need for activity? Oh, where is that coming from? Oh, okay, maybe I just need to calm down, sit down, you know, and do some more sattva increasing activities. And my book actually is basically a compilation of 108 sattvic practices that you can embody in your life for your mind, your body, your spirit, and, you know, daily and seasonal routines from Ayurveda. And to come in, you know, to a state of balance with those. So then, you know, we learned that like increases like, and I'll open the floor for questions. So if you have any, do jot them down and ask me. So like increases like is an important principle of Ayurveda that, you know, whenever you have so much of the same, you have increase, and the dislikes or the opposites, they decrease each other. So this is a really important concept, and you can see that, you know, even in the downward spiral of addictions, right? It's like the more you do of it, the more it's like compelling to do. So it's like maybe started with one drink, and then it became have to have two in order to feel the same effect, and then, you know, three, and then it's like out of control kind of spiral. But fortunately, the reverse is also true, that the more positive choices you make, the more positive choices you can make. So like increases like is a really important principle. And we'll, again, see it at play here when we try some of the practices that are in the book. The last core principle I'll share with you as part of this introduction is about the sun. We really, really love the sun in Ayurveda. The sun is a symbol of health. It's a symbol of creativity, spiritual illumination, inner power, stamina, willpower, abundance, illumination. The sun is like that activating force. It's connected to the fire element, and it helps to bring about really amazing digestion. So in the daily and seasonal routines of Ayurveda, which help us to really build our health and live in harmony with the way that the world is turning, right? The earth is turning towards the sun or away from the sun. We are really following that in order to stay in a state of alignment with nature and to really live in harmony with nature. So we really, really love the sun. And I'm actually going to tell you more about it, because I am going to lead you now through the more experiential part of Ayurveda, which are some of the practices, just a couple that are featured in my book. And I'm actually going to share it with you a little bit out of order. So if you see the book, you'll see that I've divided it up with someone's very excellent organization tip. She had studied my blogs and read up everything, and she was like, this is how you should lay it out. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. I wish I would have thought of that, you know? So I've laid it out, or she's helped me lay it out, so that it's about healing your body, strengthening your mind, freeing your spirit, and then putting it all together with daily and seasonal routines. But here, I'm actually going to present it in a different order. I'm going to start with freeing your spirit, because that's actually where I started on my journey. So I actually went almost in an opposite order, where I started with the spirit connection, and then that helped me move into mindfulness. And then the mindfulness helped me to, you know, take care of my body and get the foods that were going to support me, and to really, you know, put the whole lifestyle then together. So I wanted to share it in the way that I experienced it. And the first practice, a couple of practices that I'll share with you are about the sun. They're about waking up early. So in chapter 7, I have these inspired ancient practices that you can do to, you know, awaken your health and awaken to your true nature. And the very first thing that I like to do when I wake up in the morning is to look at my hands. And I'll even invite you to try that, where you can just take a moment here and really appreciate your hands for all the hard work they allow you to do. Your hands are what even got you here, like on the subway or however you got here, but they helped you. They told you, you know, through email or Facebook or some other means that this event that you're here for was happening, right? And your hands allowed you to open the door and to shake hands with someone else and to really, you know, act and interact in the world. So the hands are a very, very important organ of action. And, you know, you can imagine here that in your own hands lies the power of abundance, the power of knowledge, creativity, and the power to really change your life, the power to truly take health into your own hands. And it's said, you know, that when we sow a thought, we reap an action. When we sow an action, we reap a habit. When we sow a habit, we reap a character. And when we sow a character, we reap a destiny. So our whole destiny, our health, our whole life is right here in our own hands. And as I gaze at my hands, first thing when I wake up, I am reminded of me, that I have everything I'm looking for right here in my own hands. Before I get distracted, before I want to go look at my cell phone, check my emails, and do all the things I got to do in my life, I got to know who I am. I have to greet myself. And so when I look at my hands, I remember that. And I ask that may my hands really be guided to take those actions which bring me and others greater health and happiness. And may I, you know, let go of my need to want to try to control everything. May I surrender my rajas and tamas and really, you know, stay in my sattvic self. So this is just a universal blessing that I start my day with and that I invite you to. And then, you know, you can move your hands like this and just take all this positive energy and really spread it out all over, you know, your head and your shoulders and your legs, and just, you know, move it all around. And the best thing actually is to do this first thing in the morning by waking up early. So this practice, you know, I was just on a radio show about my book, and one of the people had asked me, so what was one thing that really like helped you the most out of your book? And I was like, wow, what a question. I put 108 things and you're asking me to choose one? You know, how do I do that? So then I was like, actually, yeah, I don't have to think about it. It was waking up early. It was a huge thing for me, because it was hard. I will say that it was hard to do, but I was motivated to do it because the sattva quality that we talked about, right? It's actually activated in the whole universe between 4 to 6 a.m. So the ancient yogis have taught about this spiritually charged time called Brahma Muhurta, and it's when the whole universe is like raining down sattva. So when you wake up at this time, you just will feel all this inspiration come in and all this, you know, creativity and like the inspiration, the answers that you're looking for the night before, they suddenly come. And it's like, oh, that makes so much more sense now. So, you know, when we wake up early, we get to connect with that. And when we actually see the transition from darkness to light, when we see that sunrise, it's so symbolic to our psyche, to our very, you know, deep, deep, deep essence, that this too shall pass, that the darkness is only temporary and the light is the only truth. And that is so healing for our whole mind, our emotions. It gives a recharge to us at so many different levels. You know, it's awakening us to our sattva self. And so amazing, right? Benjamin Franklin says, early to bed, early to rise makes you healthy, wealthy, and wise. Okay, that's a nice little thing to say, Mr. President, you know, but how does that really work? And it's through the understanding of, you know, the Ayurveda gunas, right? These three qualities. When you wake up early, you become wise because you get the sattva, you get the inspiration, but you also become healthy, which is then the foundation of becoming wealthy, right? Because health is wealth and they're so deeply connected. Even if you have wealth but you don't have health, you'll lose your wealth in paying for your health, you know? So it's so key that we have it. And when we wake up early, it actually really supports elimination too. So people who are struggling with chronic constipation, like for years and years, before we even recommend any kind of Ayurvedic herbs or medicine, we ask them what time do they wake up and can they wake up earlier? And it has such an amazing effect because the force of Vata dosha, right, the air and space, as well as the sattva and the mind are active. So what the Vata dosha does, it's responsible for movement. So when you wake up, when movement, that bio force of movement is dominant in the atmosphere, it helps everything in you to start moving. So it helps the bowels to get eliminated. It helps you to actually physically get up more easily than if you sleep in beyond that. Because if you sleep in beyond six, then the force of tamas is there. So that force is pretty stable. It wants to stay put. It wants to sleep till 10, you know, when the pitta force, which is fire and earth become, or fire and water becomes active, because then that wants to get you up and going. So you kind of, once you know how to work with these forces, then you know how to live in an optimal way. And that's why, you know, these sayings are there. It's explained by the science of Ayurveda, why it makes you all of these things, healthy, wealthy, and wise. So, you know, and if you're like, oh my God, she's asking me to wake up between 4 to 6, it's okay. I had that reaction too when I first heard that. So what I would say is that every little thing counts. No action goes wasted on this journey of awakening to health. So what you can do is just go small and keep it sustainable. So if you're like, yeah, this sounds great, Ananta, I want to do that too, then you just can start by going to bed a little bit earlier, like maybe 10 minutes, you know, and then you wake up 10 minutes earlier in the morning. And then, you know, the next day you shift like that. But what will really help is to feel the joy of it, you know, like do it and actually experience it. And I think, you know, the more you get into enjoying this process, the more it motivates you to then see, okay, where can I cut down on late night stuff? What's keeping me up? And how can I maybe try to do that in the morning? And, you know, I promise you, as you start to plug into these practices from the Ayurveda tradition, I didn't make any of them up. They're all, you know, passed down from a really long, long time and a long lineage of amazing teachers. You will start to feel yourself realigning. So even, you know, if you feel more tired, then waking up early actually helps you to feel less tired. It's amazing. And then it helps you to actually sleep on time, because by the end of the day, like by 10, which is what's recommended to go to bed by, you actually feel like sleeping. You know, people who have trouble sleeping, when they start waking up early, then they want to go to bed early. And then when you go to bed early, it's easier to be in alignment with nature and with nature's laws, because these different forces are active at different times of the day. So if we stay up past 10, then the pitta force of fire gets really active. And so you may want to start reorganizing your closet at that time. You may want to start paying your taxes at that time. You might have awesome, brilliant, creative ideas, but the problem is your digestion didn't get the opportunity it needed to digest the whole day's worth of food, knowledge, information, and get you recharged for the next day. So then when your digestion gets compromised because you're up organizing your closet and doing other things that the fire motivates you to do, then, you know, your whole health starts to suffer as a result. And so we really, really recommend, for recharging your body at all levels, it's very important to try to sleep early and just transition from wherever you are, you know, very slowly, but slow and steady, you know, is the key to really making it sustainable and to have that joy in it, you know, really bring that joy factor to it. But if you're looking for a place to start, and if you are curious what I started with, this was definitely, you know, a very, very big doorway. And it makes such a difference, even to wake up a little bit earlier at a time, you know, from 8 to 7:45, like I feel the difference. And if, say, I'm like traveling and I got up a little bit later, I feel it. And I'm like, oh man, tomorrow I'm back on it, because it just feels so much better to be in this particular rhythm and alignment. And then, you know, we'll go then into strengthening the mind. So this is a really fun part of the journey. The mind can be either our best friend or our worst enemy, right? We always have a choice. And so Ayurveda gives us tools to really help make those choices, to really befriend our own mind. And I struggled for a long time with my mind, so I can say this from the power of experience. And so the key for food, you know, is that food is medicine. It's a very core principle that when your diet is correct, medicine is of no need. And when diet is incorrect, medicine can't really help you. So food is very, very important in Ayurveda. You are not just what you eat. We hear that all the time, right? Like, you are what you eat. What in the world does that mean, right? Well, we actually take it a little bit further, that you actually are what you digest. And unfortunately, you're also what you don't digest. So you want to make sure that you're able to eliminate out whatever, you know, you're not able to use as nutrients in the body, right? So healthy elimination is the key indicator. And I have here in the first chapter of my book, like on, let's see, what page is it? It's very early on, but I'm showing you how to check in with your digestion by observing your elimination, because it's such the key to health. So there's like a detailed list of what to look for here, you know, in terms of knowing if you're on track with your digestion. It's seen in how your elimination comes, what time, what consistency, you know, and all of these things. So it's very important. And the routine of, you know, eliminating in the morning, I never ever even paid attention to it or noticed it or anything. And it's just such a mundane thing, right? But with Ayurveda, it's like, yes, everything's on track, you know, like, good, elimination happened. I'm happy on with my day. I'm feeling good and healthy. And, you know, so this is a really, really key concept to understand from Ayurveda. And one thing that really helps with it, no matter where you are in your ability to cook or not cook, is not just what you eat, but actually how you eat. It really matters for your health and your well-being. And these are all pictures from my book. We had a really beautiful team of art directors and photographers who wanted to help capture the spirit of Ayurveda, you know, and really inspire people through that to come to it, who may have been afraid to do that before, or thought it was too complicated or whatever. So the first thing actually I've written about and that I really believe and I've seen over and over is the power of choosing warm cooked foods. So even if you can't cook, but you're just choosing between soup and salad, if you choose soup or a steamed version of the salad, it will go a very long way in boosting your digestion because it is seen like a fire. So whenever we put warm substances into a fire, it likes that, so it works better. And when you put cold things in, it just, you know, diminishes the fire. So it's like putting out the fire with a hose. That's what happens when you drink ice cold water and, you know, eat like really cold foods all the time. And, you know, if you're like, oh my gosh, that may be hard. I like salads. Totally fine. You know, I have a whole chapter on spices, Ayurvedic spices that you can add to salads to help give it the fire and to help it, you know, digest properly in your system. So we can meet you wherever you're at with this. No matter what you like, you know, you can apply these principles. But this definitely is helpful. The sages have imagined the body to have all these channels through which food is flowing. And, you know, for it to flow smoothly and for the nutrients to reach the places where they need to reach, we want the warmth to be there. Because in the laws of physics, wherever there's heat, there's expansion. And when there's coldness, there's a constriction. So things get stuck, you know? That's why, like, raw yogurt, for example, if you just have it by itself and you don't have a very strong digestive fire, the coldness will start to clog your digestive channels. So it won't go down properly. Then there may not be an elimination. And then, you know, everything's stuck. So the system needs some recharging that way. And, you know, we still like yogurt. We just have different ways of having it with different processes, like whisking it, adding spices. And, you know, in the summertime, if there's a lot of heat, you can make a special rose lassi recipe. And I've shared about this in the book, and even mango lassi, you know, would be a nice thing to have. So you can definitely still enjoy all the things that you like. It's just that you'll enjoy it with more intelligence and more of a understanding around it. And then you'll benefit more from what you're having versus being harmed by your food. So this is an important seed to plant. And these are some of the recipes that you can try that are in the book for you. So I'll just kind of pass through them, but they're really, you can learn about their qualities and things here, and even give a new twist to your old favorites like pasta, so that it actually benefits you and you don't have to say goodbye to it as a result, but you can just enjoy it more. So this is, you know, really good. And I'll actually take this time now to pass out some raisins. So we're just going to do a little experiential practice here with some raisins. And you can, I hope you had a nice little chat with your neighbor. So how are the raisins, by the way? Yeah, they're good. Did you really notice them? Or were you more talking? Usually people forget what the raisins were, you know, because it's like we get so drawn into kind of the experience of talking and, you know, like that's what I used to do in New York, like just talk, eat out and grab stuff on the way. Like I really didn't treat my body well. Like it was just like a trash can, you know, like just put stuff in and whatever, just grab it on the go and, you know, just eat something because I have to eat to function. And if it's convenient, I'll have it. And so Ayurveda really like transformed all these eating disorders and digestive issues that I had just by the experience of eating. And so let's actually do this again, and we'll do it with the art of mindful eating. So now this time I want you to really connect with the raisins. So actually when you receive them, take a look at them in your hands, really like notice their flavor, or notice their texture, I should say. Notice their shape. And really, you know, just imagine the whole process that they underwent to come to you, from being grapes to being dried into raisins to being cultivated by the farmers to being, you know, transported by whoever transported them. There are so many people and so many things that happened for these simple raisins to come to you right here like this. So, you know, just as you imagine that, really like feel gratitude and experience that connectedness of you with the food, and, you know, welcome this food now to become nourishment and to really, you know, soothe your body and to heal your body. And then now as you eat the raisins, I invite you to see if you can even chew them up to like 20 times, and you can close your eyes and really notice the subtle flavors and the textures. And, you know, savor the experience. Make it like a mindful meditation in and of itself. Just you and the raisins. And just take your time. And don't get too much into counting, but counting is sometimes helpful just to help us stay there. And then we'll continue to sit quietly, and we're actually going to try sitting, if we feel comfortable, in something called Vajrasana. This is the only yoga asana that you would do after eating. And it's simple. You just sit on your heels if you feel comfortable. If not, that's totally fine, because it's not about what you do outwardly, but it's more about the inner experience that you have with the practice. So make sure you're comfortable however you're sitting. And just make sure to sit up nice and straight and tall. And this will be really helpful. When we sit like this, it has a tremendous impact on digestion. It allows everything to flow smoothly. And what's really powerful here, actually, though, is the visualization and the mindfulness that we bring to it. So here, after eating, we have this invitation to make it a meditative experience and to bring the meditative moments into our day-to-day life. So you can, you know, just even close your eyes here and really imagine that there's a thunderbolt inside from the base of your spine to the top of your head, and that it's like a diamond-like thunderbolt with the hard, compacted, you know, diamonds, and it's like shining, and it's full of vitality and immunity, good health and radiance. All of this, you know, is happening, and you can just imagine now that the raisins are really becoming amazing nourishment, amazing immunity, amazing power. They're giving you courage and strength. And just imagine them getting beautifully digested. And really experience your inner power here as you do that, as you imagine this thunderbolt really giving you, you know, this power. The pose is named for a king who used the thunderbolt to remove ignorance and bring about goodness. And as you're sitting here, it's actually connecting the best of your physical manifestation, that really nicely digested food, to your highest consciousness. So it's a very unique invitation and a unique opportunity to connect all parts of yourself. And then when you're ready, you can slowly open your eyes and come back into the room. And I would love to take a feedback and just hear how this was for you. If anyone would like to share? Yeah, sure.
So we can share on anything, or you wanted to share on the practices?
On this practice would be great. Okay. And then I'll open it later for you to share on anything.
So Amanda, the job.
Thank you.
Okay, nobody can hear me. on the Vajrasana, I really felt a lot of sadness come up.
And
shall I tell you more about that, just a little more, or no?
Sure, you can say more.
Okay. You know, I'm thin, and my mother was not. She was overweight. And when I was sitting there, I was remembering suddenly, well, maybe not so suddenly, because something happened earlier today, I won't go into details, with someone who's overweight and verbally, texting-wise, critical. And that's what I think came up. I came towards something from the, like you were talking about the doshas and, you know, mm-hmm. all that. I think that I recognize that probably, I don't know, I just brought this up, I'm not the same dosha as my mother. And maybe that was a big problem between us. Mm. And so I was just remembering, wow, I was always thin and I got criticized by people who were overweight, mm-hmm. from my point of view, that, you know, you're too skinny, da-da-da, like that.
Yeah, and you know, like, I think with the practice, right, all these things can come up, and sometimes it's actually really helpful to even have those kind of insights that, oh, like, I noticed that some sadness came, because the more we gain awareness, the more we're able to then identify what are those limiting, you know, habits or thoughts or, you know, things that trigger those feelings. And the more we're aware, the more we can start to transform them, you know. So in that sense, it is like a reclaiming of your inner power, because you're getting in touch with yourself, you know, when you practice this. And then it allows those things that are not you to be seen, so that they can be ultimately, you know, dissolved by the power of the awareness and the intention that you bring to it, to really, you know, be in your power and to really connect with your true nature as you're practicing. So that's, you know, the invitation, I think, of this. And I'm glad that you shared your experience. So thank you. And we'll keep moving just because of the time, and I want to make sure that you get to experience everything and ask your questions. So with mindful eating, it's really helpful to then complete this. You know, you sit for a little while, and the sitting still calms vata dosha, which we like to keep calm. And, you know, so you do that for a few moments, and that helps the food to move where it needs to go immediately. And then that allows the whole process of digestion to get started in a really powerful way, regardless of what you ate, but just have bringing the mindfulness into it. We all have to eat, you know, but you can eat like this, and it will have a great benefit. And then, you know, after 3 or 4 minutes of doing this, then it's recommended to take a 100 steps walk. So if you ever feel tired after you eat, or you just feel like kind of lethargic, you know, then it's really, really helpful to do this. Just take a walk, you know, in your office if it's cold outside, or you can even go outside and try to, if possible, you know, go to a park or something if you have one close by, or just, you know, being outside and walking just a little bit. It's not a lot of distance, but it will help to then, you know, allow the food to start moving in a healthy way. So this is a recommended practice from the texts. And then as often as possible, you know, you can try to eat in a place that inspires you. So our surroundings do affect us, and that's why it's so wonderful that we have the center here. You know, it's such a calm space, and you just feel it right away, like, oh wow, there's this like calm in the chaos of New York by coming here. And similarly, you know, if you have a choice, right, on a weekend or something perhaps, or if you live or you work near a park, for example, then you can try to, you know, sit there, sit outdoors somewhere, and really even like eat out of utensils that you like. You know, all of this is really helpful because the sight of the food is really important. So that's why I even shared some of those photos, because the presentation of the food, the smell of the food, all of these things are actually stimulating your digestion. So they're not just, you know, mentally pleasing, but it's also going to benefit your digestion. We want you to, Ayurveda wants you to eat what you enjoy, you know? So there's a concept of hridaya foods. Hridaya means heart. And so you should love the food, you know, to be able to benefit from it and to enjoy it. So being healthy doesn't mean eating bland. It actually is important that you, you know, have a joyful connection with your food in all these ways, by feeling the gratitude for it, by, you know, digesting it, imagining it becoming digested, and then by, you know, having it in a place that inspires you. It's really a wonderful way to connect with, you know, with the food to really bring about healing in your body and your mind. And bringing that mindfulness to it, I think, is so, so important. And it's been a big change for me. And it's a great reminder, right? Because we love like sitting, and it's so great when we can sit for a long time and practice meditation, but we may not always be able to. So this is a way to bring your practice into your day-to-day, you know, whenever you're eating, and just, you know, take a couple moments to do it. So then the third segment that we'll try out is more of a physical practice, and we'll understand a little bit more how it works. So one of the main symptoms of Vata dosha, being overactive in the body, is a lot of pain and trouble sleeping at night. So I've taught now, I went back after teaching youth, and I went deeper into my own journey of Ayurveda, and then I went back to teach staff members Ayurveda self-care lifestyle practices in an 8-week pilot program. And they tried this practice that I'm about to teach you because they had a lot of pain and a lot of difficulty sleeping at night. And we did a before and after survey, and they had a 47% reported reduction in pain, and they got 46% improved sleep based on their own reporting on a scale of 1 to 10. So it's a very, very powerful practice. This one really like spoke to them, so a lot of them started to do it. And it's really a beautiful self-love practice. So I will introduce this to you with the understanding of how it works. So if you look at why we have pain and poor sleep, Ayurveda is trying to go to the root, right, of the cause. So at a physical, mental, emotional level, there's a lot of movement, and the movement can be excessive, and Vata dosha is responsible for movement. And if you think about the qualities of air and space, they're dry, light, rough, subtle, and cold. So if we want to balance this and feel stability mentally, emotionally, physically, then we really need a grounding force of kapha, with the water and earth, to be able to, you know, help us restabilize ourselves. And this will really build up our health, you know, and help us to sleep better at night and to reduce the aches and pains that we feel in the body, because of the concept of like increases like, right? That whenever there's similarity, there's increase, and dissimilarity, there is decrease. So this is the practice of oiling, actually. So oil, you know, has the qualities of kapha dosha. It's oily, heavy, smooth, gross, and stable, which is the exact opposite of the vata dosha, which is like dry, light, rough, subtle, and mobile. So what we're doing here is bringing in the opposite. And it's so beautiful. In the Ayurvedic texts, you have so many examples of where poetry and science really merge. So even in the Sanskrit language, which Pali and, you know, the Buddhist texts are also coming from and they're connected to, it says sneha, you know, which means to oil, and it also means to love. So with oil, we're really, you know, having like self-love. And we, sure enough, love our oil in Ayurveda. So massaging your body with oil is one of the best ways to release stress, build up your energy, and really help you to sleep better at night. It also helps to ward off aging symptoms. It relieves pain and nourishes your skin and body, giving you longevity, energy, stamina, amazing sleep, and glowing skin. So the word abhyanga is what we also use to call oiling in Ayurveda. And this comes from two root words, abha, which means to glow, and anga, which means your limbs. So it's literally bringing a glow to your limbs. It's so beautiful, and it's really true. So how we would do this is with sesame oil in the cold seasons of the year. In warmer weather, we would recommend coconut oil, and in the in-between periods or when you're not sure, you can use some combination of sesame and coconut oils. And this will be really, really helpful. It helps to warm up the oil, so that way you can have your body can digest the oil. Because like your stomach, right, is like digesting your food, your skin is also an organ of digestion. Your skin has to digest everything that touches it. So when it's oil, it also has to digest that. And so when you have the oil ideally warmed up, you know, then it allows the oil to come in more. And the way that you apply it also generates heat. So we'll actually do it. So if I'd like to have a volunteer who would like to try. Sure. Yeah, you can both come. Actually, I need to. So that's perfect. Let's see, where can we have you? Maybe if you feel comfortable sitting on the stage here, that would be fine. Yeah, if you feel comfortable, you can sit here and then you can join right here. Perfect. Yeah, that sounds great. So we'll learn the first way, which is, who wants to do the feet? Who wants to oil their feet? Would you like to? Okay, so this is, it's not exactly warm because of the circumstances. But what you can do is just take a bottle like this, and you can put it into a pot of boiling water. You know, that would be really easy. Or if you have a kettle, then it's really easy to just keep that boiling water really fast. You know, just heat it up and then put it into a bowl and it's warm. That's the easiest way. You could also use a crock pot. Like there's plug-in crock pots, which you can put oil in. As soon as you wake up, you just plug it in, and then whenever you're ready to do it, it's ready for you. And similarly, if you wanted to eat warm cooked foods, you can also cook in these crock pots, you know, and not the same one, obviously, but you can use that, and you can take your food with you. They even have transportable ones, which are like little lunch boxes, you know, and you can plug it in the wall, and you have a nice warm meal, even if you don't have a microwave at your work. So that's really nice. But with the oiling of the feet, what we're going to do is actually have you try this. And you can just take a little bit, like dip your fingers inside, and then you can apply it on your feet, on one foot, and really like, it's different than applying moisturizer. So you want to really like put it onto the soles of your feet and, you know, like rub it in like vigorously, and you can even like close your eyes and really like make it a meditative experience, you know, where you are just like spending time with you, you know, and connecting with your own self and just really like bringing a lot of mindfulness and intention into it. So making this like your special time. It's like your own spa time, you know, without being expensive, without needing to go and depend on someone else to help you. But you just do this and it's so rejuvenating. Even if you can't do the full oil massage of the full body, just doing this will really promote sound sleep. It's a very nice way to transition from daytime to nighttime. And to really, you know, just allow you to go into that mode of now I'm sleeping, you know, active world is calming down and we're transitioning back inside. And, you know, you just spend some time on it and it's like I'm spending time with myself and it's so nice. How do you feel as you're doing it? Yeah, it's so awesome. It is. Oil is like our best friend, you know? Awesome. So she's just extra. There's just extra love there. Then.
Can you put essential oil in the oil
like
you prefer now?
You could if you want to. Yeah. Yeah, if you want a certain smell for it, for sure. So at nighttime, you know, you can even just leave it on and then have special oil socks, which you pull on over, and those are just socks that you wear after you've oiled, and they're kind of designated for that. Or you can take a towel, like a small towel, just put it under hot water, and then you can apply that hot towel to remove the oil, and the heat from the towel will help it to get absorbed by your feet and your skin. So that would be something that you can do. And then you can also oil the back of your ears, you know, like this, and you can try that if you like. The ears are one of the seats of the Vata dosha, so it lives here. And when you oil the ears, it helps calm that Vata dosha. If you're traveling, you know, there's a lot of that ear ache and things like that. So if you experience that, this will be especially helpful to do when you land wherever you are. And, you know, it's a really, really nice practice just by itself with a little bit of, you know, warm oil, and you can even put it inside your ear if you like. And this will be very, very rejuvenating. And then thirdly, you can do the crown of your head if you like, and that's just, you know, this little spot right here. And then if you really enjoy the oiling and you're like, oh, I'm gonna do my whole head, then you can also do that. And typically that is something that you'd wanna do before a day where you're about to wash your hair. You know, you don't wanna have too much oil in your hair, but you can like really massage it into your scalp, and that's also very nourishing for your hair and the roots and everything, and helping with headaches. If you have a lot of headaches, you know, and stress, then doing a full head massage with oil would be really, really nice when you have the time. It's a great thing to do for revitalizing and rejuvenating yourself. Why sesame oil? That's a great question. You know, it's considered to be balancing for all three doshas, and the sesame oil has a heating potency in it. So particularly for pain and for trouble sleeping, it counteracts the cold quality of the air and space in Vata dosha. So it directly impacts that, and that's why it has such a great benefit, especially for sleep and for pain relief. But there's other oils too that can be used. So if a person, say, is having a lot of inflammation, then we might recommend coconut oil instead, because that has a cooling potency. We still warm it so that it still gets nicely absorbed by the skin, but it will ultimately cool the system rather than, you know, warming it. So yeah. But then my teacher actually has written a lifestyle book, and it goes into depth about the things that I've introduced in my book. And so there's a whole page in here about the different types of oils that you can use. So you can even use butter, you know, you can even use ghee, which is clarified butter. That'll be a little more expensive, you know, way of oiling, but there are a range of different options that you can use. So it's really fun that way. And so this is one thing that you can definitely do. You can do this in the morning also. But the other thing that I want to show you is, if you wanted to do your full body oil massage, then you can do that in your bathroom before you take a shower. And so, so for the other volunteer, if we can have you, I guess you didn't have a chance to do it yet. So if you want to take a little bit of oil and just show them how to do the, like an arm, you know, so when you go on the long bone, you just go up and down like this. And then when you go around the joints, then you go in a circular motion like this. And so like that, you can oil your whole body. So you can do your legs and your arms. And if there's any place that particularly hurts, you know, any pain that you're experiencing, then you can actually spend more time oiling that particular part of the body. So you can actually spend up to 7 minutes just oiling, you know, your knees, say, or your elbows or whatever, you know, might be uncomfortable in you. So that would be really a really great practice to incorporate. And, you know, when you can spend some time with it, try to like slow it down and really, you know, do it thoroughly. And that will be extremely helpful, you know, and they say touch is so important, right? For babies when they're born, and getting that touch from their mother is like really key to having a good start to life. And not everyone has that, you know, like for whatever reason in their childhood, but here you can give yourself that kind of nurturing and love and attention every day. And it's really, really beautiful. So the only things that you'd want to be mindful of is just that when you do the full body oiling, you would have ideally had your bowel movement in the morning beforehand. So you do it on an empty stomach. And that way you're able to digest the oil. So if you're having indigestion or having like diarrhea or fever or flu or like cold and cough or anything where you feel not so physically comfortable, or even like women on the menstrual cycle, then you would want to avoid doing this because your body wants to rebalance. And when you're in a relative, you know, state of balance, that's when you're your body can absorb the oil better if you're doing the full massage. But you can always do the feet. That should be fine. Typically when it's raining, we don't like to do it though, just because there's so much moisture already in the atmosphere with the rain that if you add more, it's just too much. So you want to actually stay dry. And your body will also tell you. So if you try to oil yourself when there's indigestion or you're not feeling well otherwise, or you just haven't been able to eliminate, then you might feel some discomfort as you do it. Then you know that, okay, this is my body saying it's not ready for this right now. But otherwise, it should just feel really good. So those are some indicators. And it's all, like, I've shared about it in the book. So the step-by-step guidance is there. And the contraindications also are listed. So that would be an important thing. So thank you so much for volunteering. This was really wonderful to have you. And then another thing to share with you is just about what do you do afterwards, right? Like if you do your whole body and then you want to take a shower, then it's like, will the shower dry out the skin? So a lot of people will think that, but really it's the soap. The dryness is coming from the soap. So what we recommend is using a green gram flower or mung flower as a inexpensive soap or even shampoo substitute. So you can actually use this, and it's nourishing for your body. And I'll just pass it around so you can actually see it. You can get that at any Indian store. And I've also given some resources in the book for where you can get any of the things like Ayurvedic spices or herbs or oils or, you know, anything like that. But most natural food stores would have, you know, green gram flour. Definitely the Indian stores would have it. And you can order it online also too pretty easily. So this would be really nice. Then you just, you know, basically make a paste out of it with water. You take a little bit of the powder and a little bit of water, make a paste in a small bowl, and then, you know, you just rub this on your skin like you would regular soap, and then wash it off. And it's really, really nice for the skin too. So it helps to balance your skin, whether it's too dry or too oily. It brings it into a nice state. And we also love mung dal just in general. Mung lentils are really good inside as well. They help to detoxify your body. And so we have a lot of recipes that involve that as well. So it's pretty cool because, you know, what you apply on your skin, it's like your skin is like eating it in a sense, right? So we also want it to be something that you can physically eat as well. So all natural, chemical-free, and then your kitchen becomes the source of your own, you know, skincare products and your own all natural shower ingredients. So it's really fun that way. And then all of this, you know, is in my book, and all the photos come from some wonderful photographers. So I just like to remember them. And we do have the book here for afterwards, but I also wanted to just share with you my contact information before I open it up for questions, and to just invite you to keep in touch. I write a newsletter with different Ayurvedic articles and things, and so like videos to teach you how to apply the practices. And so if you wanted to keep in touch, you can feel free to share it. And then we also have a school in Emeryville, which is where I teach, and I have also studied with my guru, and you know, we have classes there. So if you wanted to be notified of that, you can. We have online classes too. So that's located physically in San Francisco, but yeah, that's kind of it. So so you can feel free to reach out to me. And I would love to hear your experiences, you know, as you're trying any of these things. It's really fun to see how it's going for you. And, you know, it helps also to, if you're trying some of these things out, to actually do it with a friend, you know, because then you can keep each other informed about how it's going for you and ask questions and, you know, like support each other along the way, because community is a really, really important aspect of healing. So yeah, now I'd just love to take any questions that you have. Should we pass out a microphone so we can hear people? Should we pass a microphone here for a question? She had a question right here.
Hi, I was wondering if you have any specific practices that you recommend when you're going on retreat.
Going on retreat?
Mm-hmm. Like a meditation retreat.
Yeah, I mean, you mean specific for like food or?
I understand that some of the monks take certain herbs when they're on retreat to increase their concentration and so forth and grounding.
Yeah, you know, Brahmi is a good one. Brahmi is Brahmi. It's really helpful for meditation and for going deep into strengthening the mind and being able to focus more and bringing about concentration and all of that. Another really helpful thing is a breathing exercise that you can do, which is like called buzzing bee, after the buzzing of the bees. And it's really simple. You just like close your ears and then you cover your eyes and you take a deep breath in through the nose and then you make a buzzing sound like this. So that has a nice way of recharging you quickly. And then also putting you in touch with a meditative state. It just like brings you in because you're turning in all of your senses and, you know, returning to yourself that way.
And my second question is, where do you stand on milk? I know they use milk and chai tea, but in general, how is milk, you know, what's the feeling about drinking milk?
Yeah, we like milk in Ayurveda. If it's cooked, it's very helpful. So there is like a spiced milk recipe, which is featured in the book because it's so helpful for sleep. And it's really delicious. You cook it with milk and some saffron and turmeric and cardamom and some other spices. And it becomes like an amazing elixir. It's one of the Ayurveda superfoods. Mm-hmm. And the Ayurveda texts list all different types of milk, like cow's milk, buffalo's milk, goat's milk, elephant's milk, sheep's milk. But the treatment and the care of the animals is really important. So, you know, like we also recommend, like if you can, to try to research the brand of milk to make sure that they're really treating their animals properly. And if possible, they have different cow share options where you can actually go meet the cows, like see how they live and things like that. So where possible, that would be nice. And then, you know, if people are following vegan diet, then you can always adapt this and just have almond milk instead, or soy milk, or, you know, some kind of a substitute for it too.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so she had some questions.
Also, the new people, I hope you'll say your name. Hi,
thank you so much, especially to the two women that were brave enough to go up there. I'd like them to talk a little bit about whatever that experience was, because I was so jealous. But besides that, you know, you spoke about this as, I went to Vasant Lad's place in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you're studying traditional Western medicine,
mm-hmm.
could you give a little inspiration as to why this might be helpful to also at least add, or what would you suggest to get the world view more open? And you can take that whatever way you want. And then the last thing is, if you have friends that, you know, might be willing to do some of this with you, do you have any like little tips like, well, yeah, call your friend and say, oh, I'm oily, or, you know, some things to keep us doing, because you're right, in New York, we've got those lists, and maybe another one to add to the list is my friend calling me and suggesting that we're doing our thing together.
Yeah, these are some great questions. So, I mean, Ayurveda is very, very complementary to Western medicine. I think there are some amazing things that Western medicine has contributed. You know, when you're really in a difficult state, then it's very helpful to have the modern surgical tools and things available. But, you know, then when you're recovering from surgery, or when you've had a baby, or when, you know, you've gone to the hospital for any other reason, then the Ayurvedic diet will be very helpful. Eating simple foods afterwards will help your recovery process. Really incorporating key spices will help your process. So, you know, that's one really clear example. Like, my dad had a digestive issue, and we went to the hospital, and I brought Ayurvedic food, because they just like give you the same food. Like, here's some pancakes. But he went because he had digestive problems. You know, so like, pancakes are not easy to digest, you know, they're like heavy, and they're full of different things that are not so good for you. So, you know, that's where Ayurveda for one becomes extremely beneficial. You know, if they were to say incorporate like an Ayurvedic menu into the hospital, I think that would be really cool. So I'll suggest that whenever I meet people in those settings. I think that would be really powerful, you know, for it to really work hand in hand, because where Western medicine is very helpful is when you are in a state where there is, you know, a lot of things that have built up over time. But no matter where you're at with Ayurveda, you have that invitation to actively build your health, to reclaim your health, and to know that that is your true state. And we can all work on building our health all the time, whether we're sick or we're well or whatever it is. But we can keep, you know, building and really go even to a supermind. So like she was asking, what are the herbs? Well, you know, those herbs are best taken when you're already living an Ayurveda lifestyle, you're eating a diet that's supporting you, you have, you know, this whole practice in place. Then when you take those herbs, which are called rasayanas, they will have a real rejuvenating impact. They will really like build your mind to such an extent that you're no longer like even trying to just combat memory loss, but you're actually like, how do I connect my mind with the highest mind? You know, it like puts you into that spiritual frame, which is really, really inspiring. So there's definitely a lot there for anyone of any, you know, system that's very complementary, very universal. And so, yeah, I think it's but it's really like the detailed map of how to be healthy.
Are there Ayurvedic doctors, you know, are there people that you go to and say, oh, this is not like Vasant Lad? Do you find
Ayurvedic doctors, you know, do people actually find a doctor that they would say, well, I'm going to this Ayurvedic institute for my cancer or for my arthritis?
You mean, are there Ayurvedic institutes like that where you can go? You know, we're actually, from the organization where I teach and I have learned, we're in the process of developing that. So we can actually introduce this new model, you know, of awakening health, the old roots of it. Because I think what's happened with a lot of the way that Ayurveda is practiced now in the world is you know, basically in India, there was like such a devaluing of the system that people lost their confidence in it. So they tried to make it apple to apple. Like, we have this medicine, you have that medicine. We have this thing, you have that thing. So they tried to like make it so similar that it lost its essence of its, you know, multidimensional aspect of the psychology of these things that my teacher has really revitalized from the tradition of really reclaiming your health, you know, that health is your true state, awakening that is something that is a new paradigm that is important to bring forward now. And I think that would be an important next step for evolution, you know, is to reintroduce the old way of understanding this knowledge, so people really walk away feeling uplifted no matter what state they were in and know how to stay that way, you know, afterwards. So I think that's really important. And then did you want to share? I know she had invited you to do that, so feel free if you like to, and if not, that's okay too. Thank you, and thank you for volunteering again.
Hello everyone, my name is Kanisha Friend. So when I did the feet massage, it was really good because we walked like a couple blocks here. That I'm just personally really surprised that I even walked that far.
Oh wow!
It was a lot. It was like over 17.
Oh my gosh!
I walked here, and you know I'm usually done by like block 5. Mm-hmm. And so when you asked me to like close my eyes and really like get in tune with what I'm actually doing. It was helpful because I was actually really thankful for my feet that they didn't give out, or that I wasn't complaining, that I had a moment to like really like say, wow, look at this, you know what I mean? So like really appreciating my abilities. It was really helpful. I think doing it again with someone right next to me that I actually know, even if I didn't know that person, but that moment there, mm-hmm. it's kind of comforting, you know, when you're doing it with someone else. And luckily for me, there's someone that I knew, so I felt sort of like stronger connection that we were both like here for the first time and doing this for the first time together. So it
yeah.
was like it was a good moment.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing.
She was just pretending that she was shy when we were eating at the restaurant, and then, you know, our other friend Fiona right here. She was also pretending to be shy, and I'm glad that after I came back from the restroom, they were both volunteering and feeling shy. So wonderful. I'm glad you guys got here. And we were walking here slowly, and then it turned into a run because we were behind her trying to keep up with her to get here. So that was wonderful. I'm glad we all got here. And thank you. And we all
last but not least.
I was thankful I was able to take off my shoes and rest my feet, and I brought the oil back here and was able to massage my feet with it. But when I did do what is this called? The back of your ears. I had a headache, so it was really tension relieving. When you said it, I was gonna say what you said first, but I thought.
So you're just. Testimony to what is true. Yeah, totally. And I think like this book, actually, I hope it will be a helpful tool to introduce your friends to it. You know, like you can gift this. It's really like a gift book. It's just really beautiful, like coffee table kind of thing. You have all the pictures and stuff. And the reason they made it like that was to make it a really inviting approach to health and wellness so that people feel like they can come to it and really find relief in it. So the way this came about, I wasn't really like, hey, let me write a book, but I was writing articles, and then an editor had reached out to me from Story Publishing and said, you know, I've been trying to learn Ayurveda for a really long time. I've read all these books and I just get confused with the way it's presented. Would you be interested to write a really beginner book, you know, to introduce this to people in a way that they can understand it? And I would first of all like to understand it. So, you know, they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears, and that was just meant to be. So that was really the intention of it. And I think because it's a gift book, it's a nice way to invite people where it doesn't feel like something you just check off the list, but it really feels like, oh, let me get inspired, you know? So I had a lot of fun writing this. Like, I must say that writing phase was just magical. Like, it was so nice to just connect with the knowledge, to really like be with it, to go deeper into embodying it myself, to be teaching it in the prisons, to teach it at Stanford in the health improvement program. I was really like having all these experiences, seeing what people were going through, asking their questions and what they wanted. You know, they'd always ask for a book. It'd be nice if all this were kind of in one source where I can turn to it and get answers to questions, see what some of these foods look like, see what the practices, you know, involve, so that way it's easier to imagine and easier to come to it. So I think, you know, it's nice if you both have a book, you know, you and whoever you want to introduce this to, and that way you can refer to it, and then, you know, you can just do it from the place of joy, you know, don't make it a chore, but just do it like this is something you're excited about, something that you're really committing yourself to. And that's one of the things I wrote about, is that as you're reading this, try to set a sankalpa, which is a word meaning like a mindful resolution. So we don't want to just make it like our New Year's resolutions where we just throw it out the window, you know, after February 1st, it's done. But we want to really like sit and contemplate, what can I commit to out of all this? What speaks to me the most? Do I want to start with, you know, my body? Do I want to start with some of the foods or recipes or, you know, spices that she's recommending? Or do I want to, maybe you want to be like me and just like jump to the third section and be like, okay, I want to start, you know, waking up early and looking at the sun and remembering that the sun, it lives in me and it reflects my own, you know, positive qualities. Or maybe you want to just start really going into those attachments and observing and letting them go. And, you know, the way that the yoga is introduced in here, we put that together, you know, so that the yoga, when we're doing tree pose, you know, the first level of tree pose is just like this before you put your arms up. And when you're here, it's really like you're connecting to your heart and just, you know, having your hands touch, your fingers touching your heart like this, it makes a connection which calms that restless, changeable nature of the mind. It settles us into our own self, so that it's like I connect to me before I, you know, connect with someone else. And it also really is named after a sage who embodied renunciation. So he was given the opportunity to have a whole kingdom. At first it was taken away. His stepmother came in and said, I want my biological son to rule the kingdom. So she kind of abolished him to the forest, and he didn't get to be the king, you know, of his kingdom. And then she invited him somehow, after many years of being in the forest, to come back and take what was rightfully his, the throne. And he said, no, actually I'm good. I got a bigger kingdom, you know, the kingdom within. And so Dhruva is a sage who really inspires us to practice detachment, to practice, you know, letting go of these attachments and really living this wonderful path that the Buddha has taught us, and following those teachings. And, you know, that's really the invitation with it. And yeah, just, you know, go from joy to joy, go from inspiration to inspiration is what I would say, because even for teaching, you know, in different settings, some wise mentor a long time ago had said, don't just try to like impart information. The role of teaching should really be to inspire, you know, and to connect at the heart level. And so as you're reading and you're getting inspired, really, you know, allow that to fuel you forward. You can write it down, you can, you know, then really commit to it and make it your own, and go slow with it. Just do one thing at a time, you know, and really enjoy that. Slow down with it. Even the slowing down will help calm the Vata dosha. It will give you a sense that you're creating the life that you want, which is your design. It's your work of art. And so savor each moment of that, I would say. Any other questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for your wonderful introduction to Ayurveda. I'm just starting to read some books on it. Two things confuse me. One is about the oil. I read that some of them would recommend on the spices you can put or infuse the oil with for Vata, mm-hmm. What spices you can put. And the second one is about the doshas and the gunas.
Mm-hmm.
How do they connect? And it seems like then one dosha is better than the other, or...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm glad you asked this question. Okay, so yes, oils, I mean, it's a vast topic, to be honest. Like, there's actually so many oils, even beyond what even my teacher has written, which is more expanded. There are medicated oils, there are specialty oils, there's oils infused with different herbs. You can put herbs into oils and make them, in, like, have medicinal qualities. I'm actually helping, I do a lot of seva, a lot of volunteer work for the Vedika Global Organization, so I'm helping put together an Ayurveda ancestral library of teachings that my teacher has given on the different Ayurvedic herbs and spices and foods and whatnot. So there's so many recipes where you can actually infuse your oil with these herbs to give them additional qualities, to have a deeper value. So, I mean, the learning and the knowledge is so vast, and there's so many ways that it can be applied. So yes, that is definitely something, but we try to keep it simple in the beginning. You know, don't worry about cooking and infusing your oils with herbs. You can just use the oils. They're already medicinal. They're already infused with a lot of wonderful things. So you can start with these. You know, sesame and coconut are very good friends. I like to think of it like that, right? Spices as being like friends. So I introduced this magical world of friends that I've made in my kitchen and how they help me, you know, with sleep and with stress and pain and all of these things. And then the question on the doshas and the gunas, it's an important one. So there is actually a connection between doshas and gunas. So kapha dosha, which is like stable, it's very like gross and it's more grounded and all of that, it's connected with inertia, right? Like it can be, because if you think about those forces, they're similar. It doesn't mean that people with kapha have tamas, not at all, but it means that that potential is there, you know, for and there that there is that similarity, so that when it's nighttime, that tamas force does come in, you know, which helps us to sleep. And it's also between 6 to 10, the time when kapha dosha is active in the universe. So there's definitely a connection between them, 6 to 10 at night and in the morning. So yes, and then vata dosha with its activity, its movement, is connected with the principle of movement of rajas, right? Because rajas is active, it's the activating quality. And then pitta dosha, which is about transformation and metabolism and you know, that is connected with sattva because it's sharp, it's clear at best, you know. And then, of course, it can too be out of balance. So pitta can also cause problems when it's not in balance. So it may not be sattvic necessarily, but there is that potential for it because pitta is connected with fire. And so if you think about, you know, having a healthy digestion being the key to health, if you have that, then automatically the benefits of a healthy digestion are so vast. Like it gives you clear voice, it gives you good skin, it gives you energy, it gives you mental clarity, it gives you peace of mind, satisfaction. So all these things are similar, right, to sattva. So because of the connection with the fire, with health, that's where, you know, pitta and sattva are connected. But no one is definitely better than the other. We all actually have all three in different proportions. It's just a matter of what we have. And even, you know, when we look at a person, we look more at what's out of balance and how to restore that balance in terms of foods to eat and things like that. Not so much at what you are, you know, but what's not in harmony with the time and with your state of being. So, yeah, but all of them have good qualities. You know, that's why I went through and shared in the beginning, like vata dosha at best makes a person a very creative visionary. It gives us, you know, the ability to manifest and to actually meditate. You know, the space quality is the subtlest, and it's connected with that spiritual practice. So that would make someone a very great spiritual seeker, you know. And then the pitta quality, obviously, like it's sharp and it can be out of balance that way, but then it makes us like strong and entrepreneurial and executive, like you can make decisions, follow through, and you know, really be like a CEO or a great leader. And then the kapha dosha is, you know, such a wonderful one. Actually, like if there were to be a best out of the three, then kapha actually would be king, because the earth and water elements, they make up the tissues of the body, so they give us strength. They give us nourishment. They give us stamina. The kapha dosha gives the body its vitality. It's connected with immunity at best. You know, it's only when it's out of balance that it becomes like inertia or whatever. But kapha is awesome. It's healthy, and there people who have a lot of kapha are naturally nurturing. It brings a lot of compassion and, you know, some really, really good qualities that come with it. So all doshas are all, you know, having potential to be awesome and to also give us problems if they're out of balance. So we just, you know, try to live in harmony with nature, with the diet, with the lifestyle, with the seasonal practices. And all of these things will keep the doshas in a natural state of balance, which is our true state. So, yeah, thank you. Yeah.
What do you suggest, honey or,
I'm sorry. What do you suggest, honey or agave? And when you answer, if you could talk a little bit more about, you know, going outside and walking, because honey comes from the bees and outside. And I know somebody was talking about allergies, you know, this time of year. So if you want to like blend that all in, I love those type of blended answers.
Yeah. Actually, honey is really recommended at this time of year because it has the quality of reducing kapha that's gotten out of balance, and that's what causes allergies, is too much of that. So it'd be really good at this time of year in particular. Be very helpful. Yeah. Yeah, you can actually just take like a teaspoon. It's one of the recommended snacks in my book, like healthy snack options. Typically, we don't recommend too many snacking things because it interrupts your digestion. But if you just take honey by itself, like in the middle of the afternoon, you know, take a teaspoon or even 2 teaspoons, it's a nice snack. It's sweet. And it's also like cleansing your system and removing toxins from it. So it's really cool. It brings about immunity too. It has a lot of great qualities. So it's really awesome.
Is it best to have it from the place you live in?
Yeah, it's best to have it from the place you live in. And we always try to go local. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, aged. Well, it's just like you're wanting to live in harmony with nature. So nature is happening all around you. So the more you can have things that are made from the land where you're living, the closer you are then to the natural world around you. And that's just a principle of Ayurveda. Yeah, exactly. And it exposes you to the pollen locally. And yeah. So it's a really, really great thing to have. And we actually recommend 1 year aged honey. So honey and ghee, clarified butter, are like wine in that they get better over time. So if you can store away your honey for some time, then it actually just gets better. So that's really awesome too.
Follow-up question on the sleep thing.
Sure.
So I've been experiencing sleep maintenance insomnia for a couple of years, and it's very challenging, and, you know, involves that the same kind of escalating tension around sleep and association with sleep being difficult. And, you know, what you said about waking up early really resonated with me because I've been doing that, you know, a lot recently, and I've been slipping. Let me get back to it. But I haven't tried the oil thing. That sounds really good in terms of kind of a self-nurture, self-love aspect to it. But do you have any other practices that, you know, come to mind around how you beat your own insomnia, or what you know, the practices would recommend?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually have summarized it here. I have a short list of things. I'm trying to see where I have it. It's in the 8th chapter. And it's kind of like a guide of the practices that are particularly helpful for sleep. So it's number 95. So it gives you the waking up and then the drinking spiced milk. It's a special recipe that you can have with the milk and certain spices, which will help you to sleep. Then oiling, you know, would be helpful. Turning off your computer, you know, like in the nighttime, like around 8 or so the mind isn't so activated. It's like you unplug from that, and it helps you to plug in more to yourself and go into a nice sleep. This breathing exercise that I just showed, where you like close your ears and you cover your eyes, It's in here, and that will be really great to do before you go to bed at night, because that also like takes you inside. So that's really good. And then, yeah, like doing grounding activities in the evening would be really helpful. Just anything to really bring the mind into a state of calm, you know, and to not be focused so much on what you have to do and analyzing the things of the day, but just really like having a peaceful transition from day to night, and spending time with people you care about, or just doing like grounding activities like writing in a journal or practicing meditation, you know, would be a great thing to do in the evening to help you go into a sense of drawing your senses inward to be able to sleep. Yeah, well, thank you all so much. This has been so wonderful to be here with you. And thank you. Thank you all so much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.